Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ Low Latency Messaging Examining Application Behavior Through Lock Event Analysis. Today's presenter is Grant Elvis. Grant is the L2 support team lead for WMQ LLM and has resolved customer issues across a variety of LLM deployment scenarios. He also leads the WebSphere front office for financial market L2 team, a financial services industry solution for market data delivery that embeds the WMQ LLM products. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Grant.
Thank you, Joseph, and welcome to this presentation on WebSphere MQ Low Latency Messaging. I'll simply be referring to it, the product, as low latency messaging during the presentation. As Joseph said, my name is Grant Alvis, and I'm the Level 2 support team lead for LLM, and I've also been the Level 2 support team lead for the last 2 years for WebSphere Front Office for Financial Markets, and it's an industry solution that delivers market data to the enterprise, and it embeds MQ LLM product. So today I'm going to be giving a presentation on how you go about examining the behavior of your LLM application by analyzing log events. Next slide. Slide 2. So in this session I'm going to answer the question, how do you determine what the LLM runtime is really doing once the messages start flowing between the transmitters and the receivers? And to answer that question, I'm going to explain what LLM log events are, how and why they get generated, and what they can tell you about what's going on under the covers of your LLM application. And the bulk of the presentation is going to focus on generating log events using the sample applications that ship with the LLM product. And I'll demonstrate the cause and effect of configuration settings and the message size and rate on the log events that are generated both before and after the LLM applications start exchanging messages. The log events generated after the messages start flowing are the most interesting log events because they're the ones that validate, you know, all the great features of LLM and let you know that they're doing what you expect them to do. And by using the sample programs that ship with the product, you can reproduce for yourself what I've presented here and use that for the basis of further exploration. In the interest of time, I'm going to narrow the focus of this presentation down to the reliable multicast messaging protocol, RMM. And I'm also going to focus on the Linux platform and the C API language bindings. But the presentation is generally applicable to all of the LLM protocols and supported platforms and API language bindings. And before we dive in to looking at the log events, I'm going to give a little bit of context to our discussion with a quick overview of the high-level flow of an RMM application. But I am going to assume that you're familiar with basic LLM concepts, such as what an instance and a topic are, and what multicast messaging is. So at the end of the presentation, you'll have a solid understanding of what LLM log events are and be able to examine the log events and understand your application's operation in key areas such as reliability and congestion management. Most importantly, this will provide you with a foundation that will enable you to pursue some more advanced tasks such as problem determination and performance tuning. Next slide. Slide 3. Okay, so you've written your LLM application, it compiles, it runs, and the receiver appears to be getting messages from the transmitter. So now what? You know, how do you validate that your application is adhering to the configuration characteristics you set? The APIs themselves don't give you a lot of direct feedback because most of the parameters to the LLM APIs are input parameters, and these parameters are settings that apply to events that are going to happen at some point in the future. The LLM has a set of monitoring APIs, which are the best way to understand the performance characteristics of your application, but that's beyond the scope of this presentation. And we're not so focused here on performance, per se, as we are on expected behavior. And that's where LLM log events come in. The log events are LLM runtime events that tell us what LLM is doing, both from a positive and a negative standpoint. Next slide. Slide 4. So what is a LLM log event? A log event is basically an LLM runtime log message. And LLM is a performance-focused product, so logging is offloaded to the application via log event callback handlers. And that way, an LLM programmer can choose whether they want to process log events or not, as well as how they want to handle them. So if log events are of interest, the program has to register a log event callback function at instance initialization. For example, with the RMM protocol, that would be when you call RMM TXinit or RMM RXinit. And the application can control the volume of the log events in a couple of ways. It can, from the LLM runtime, it can control it by setting the log level when you create an instance. And this controls the amount of log events that are delivered to the log event handler. And then you can also, from the application level, filter the log events in the log event handler based on any fields in the log event structure. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Next slide. Slide 5. So programmatically, here's what an LLM log event structure looks like. This is C bindings here. First, you have the message key, which we'll be referring to as the log event ID. Then you have the log level, and that's the level at which LLM starts logging a particular event, log event. And this can be in a range of 1 to 9. You can use a numeric value, or you can use one of the LLM enumerated types that gives some context as to what the log level means. So, for example, LLM informational level messages are logged at level 5, which is the enumeration LLM log lev info, and that's the default log level. You have the event params field, which is it's an array of character strings that provide the qualifying information for the log event, and then end params, and that's the number of events that are in the event params array. You have the module name, which is the LLM module that logged the event, for example, RMMT for an RMM transmitter. You have the thread ID, which is the ID of the thread from which the log event was generated. The timestamp, which is the timestamp of when the log event was created. And you have the instance name, which is the string name of the instance from which the log event came. And this value can be set when the instance is created, but the default is to just name the instance RMMT for a transmitter or RMMR for a receiver, followed by a dot and then the instance ID. So, for example, RMMT.1 would be a default transmitter instance. And then the last two fields, pad and reserve, are for boundary alignment and future use. I've listed the log level events on the right side and shown the division between the events that are for customer use and those that are primarily for IBM support to use for problem determination. All of the levels from none through info are going to be documented for RMM in the problem determination section of the LLM Info Center in the upcoming LLM 2.3 release. And the levels event through Xtrace are not documented, and those are subject to change. So therefore, you can enable these higher levels and observe the log events they generate, but you should definitely not code your app to interpret any of these log events, these levels. Just stick to those that are logged at info level and below. Next slide, slide 6. So here you can see the prototype for the onLogEvent callback handler. The log event structure we just looked at delivered as the first parameter of the function. And I provided the C source code for the actual log event handler used by the sample programs that ship with the product. And I'll be talking about these samples during this presentation. And you can see that it's just a simple printf of a few fields. And in practice, you'll want to print out the timestamp in a readable format and print out the log level so you can determine if the log event represents an error, a warning, an informational message, etc. And also, you'd want to examine the end params field of the log event structure and print out each element of the params array. This sample log event handler just prints out the first value of the array. But I just wanted to show you what the sample programs actually do. And then at the bottom of the slide, I've shown a sample output line from that above log event handler. And this particular log event 15415 just contains the LLM versioning info and the platform in use. Next slide, slide 7. So now that we've discussed the log event structure and the log event callback, I want to look at where you register the callback and how it fits into the bigger picture of an RMM application. So here's a high-level overview of the key RMM API calls that are made by all RMM transmitter and receiver applications. On the transmitter side, start off RMM TXinit, and this creates and initializes an instance handle, and it configures the instance's characteristics, such as the protocol you're going to use, the memory utilization characteristics, that type of thing. And a particular interest to us is that RMM TXinit is also where the application registers its log event callback function. So I've got that highlighted there in green. RMMTX create topic, this is where you create and initialize each topic that your application is going to send messages over, and it configures the topic's characteristics, such as topic name, feedback mode, etc. And then lastly, on the transmitter side, you have RMMTX submit message, and this is called for each message that is going to be sent. On the receiver side, likewise, you have RMMRX init, and that also creates and initializes an instance handle, and that configures the instance's characteristics, and also registers a log event callback handler, which is going to be the focus of what we're talking about. And then the application calls RMMRX join multicast group, and this is where it makes the network calls to join the multicast group where the data is expected to be received. And then RMMRX create topic creates and initializes each topic that the application is going to receive messages over, figures the topic's characteristics. And it also registers the callback function that will deliver messages to your application. Here, it's important to note that this is asynchronous. Here, with the samples that I'm going to be talking about, we'll be working with a message callback function. And you can also receive data on a per-packet basis as opposed to a per-message basis, but the samples we're going to be working with use asynchronous message callbacks. Next slide, slide 8. So the focus of the presentation is to show how the RMM configuration settings and the message size and rate affect the log events that get generated. So this slide demonstrates the general format that I'll use throughout the presentation to show the configuration settings shown under the value box, the API that they are applied to shown under the API call box, and the subsequent log event IDs that are generated as a result of these settings, and those are shown under the log event IDs box. And then on the bottom, I'll show the message string associated with that log event ID as the sample programs have logged it, and that's shown here under the log event message box. I also use red text to highlight the event IDs and green text to draw attention to the values and fields that are of focus to what I'm talking about. And you can see the samples here of the log level field and the event ID 15004. And I want to apologize in advance. Some of the log event messages are fairly lengthy and take up a lot of space on the page. So some of them are going to be kind of small. And you'll want to definitely full screen the presentation to save your eyes from having to strain too hard. I decided to truncate this particular one, but there's others that I've squeezed onto the page. Next slide, slide 9. So here's some background info on the RMM basic sample program that I've used to create the log events that we're going to be discussing today. So the RMM basic ships with the product, and it includes a sender and a receiver application called simply RMM sender and RMM receiver, and they demonstrate the basic features of RMM. It resides in the sample subdirectory of the root LLM install directory. So it creates a single instance, and it allows you to create topic with or without TurboFlow labels and or message properties, which are two features of LLM. And the TurboFlow and message properties aren't the focus of this presentation, but I've enabled them because I'm just using the shipped config files that come with the product, and those config files define these topic characteristics. It uses negative acknowledgement receiver feedback, NAC feedback, which means that receivers only send feedback to transmitters if they detect that they've missed a packet. And I'll talk more about that later on. And as you've already seen, the log event handler for the sample program is very simple and just prints out all the log events to the screen. And lastly, you can configure the message size and rate from the command line, and that allows you to easily change the message load that you put on both LLM and your network. Next slide, slide 10. The RMM sender program is the RMM basic samples message transmitter application. And on the command line, you specify the message size and rate, and you give it a config file. And the config file allows you to set some basic information, such as the multicast group names, topic names, etc. And one thing to be aware of when you run the sample program is that the network interface over which the transmitter and receiver will communicate, it's hardwired to the loopback interface. So if you're going to run the sample across machines, you'll have to change the IP address programmatically and recompile your program. Next slide, slide 11. So here's the sample application's config file, and this is in the config directory. You can see the path I've given there, samples config, rmmsender_basic.config. first set of log events that we're going to be talking about, looking at, created by a test run of the RMM sender program using this out-of-the-box configuration, meaning I just used the files that are shipped with the sample and unmodified. I didn't change anything. Also, I used the RMM sender underscore basic.config file and specified a message size of 1,000 bytes and a message rate of 1,000 messages per second. And so you can see here the contents of the config file as well as the exact command line I used. Next slide. Slide 12. So let's take a look at some of the basic transmitter log events. If you run the RMM sender at the default log level of 5, which is info level, you'll get a few high-level log events that give you some basic information on the instance and topics in use. And one of the first log events delivered by LLM is this instance configuration log event, 15004. And this log event is of interest because it prints out the instance parameters your application is using. So in the case where you have some configuration parameters set programmatically, but you are also taking the default values on some of them, you can see the LLM runtime is actually using. The basic values here map directly to the RMM tconfig structure that's passed into RMM txinit API. And the advanced values have to be set using the ancillary parameters field of the RMM tconfig structure. And you should have a really good understanding of what you're doing before you think about changing any of the advanced configuration parameters. And in a lot of cases, the default advanced values will be sufficient. I've highlighted a few parameters that are of interest, including packet size, as well as max memory allowed kbytes, and minimal history kbytes. And these last two values control how your LLM transmitter manages its memory resources. And we'll come back to these later on when we discuss snapshots. And speaking of snapshots, note that in order to enable snapshots, you have to provide a non-zero value for snapshot cycle milli equals zero. And it defaults to zero, which means they're disabled. That value you can see set down there in the bottom left corner. And we'll talk more about snapshots later. Next slide. Slide 13. So after your transmitter has created an instance, it will create topics over which it's going to send messages. And if you read across the top of the slide, you can see that the sample application config file specifies a multicast group of 239, 255, 124, 1, and a topic name of topic A. And it provides a TurboFlow label of 25. And this information gets read in by the program and then passed to RMMTX create topic API and results in the log events 15005 and 15410 being generated. And looking at the two log event messages here, the first log event shows the parameters that are passed into the RMMTX create topic call. And these map to the RMM RX topic parameters structure that gets passed to RMMTX topic create. And the second log event shows the resultant settings that were assigned. And this is useful because it shows how default values were resolved. So for example, the first log event message shows the value desk data port equal negative 1. And this means use the port value defined at the instance level. And the instance created by this sample had used the default port, which is 34343. And you can see in the second log event message that the desk data port was set to this default port of 34343. So if the application wanted to override the default port value, it would have specified a port number instead of negative 1 when it created the topic. The topic creation log event provides some useful information. You can see here that the feedback mode is set to 2, which is negative acknowledgement or NAC feedback. The transmitter defines the feedback mode for a topic. So we'll talk about that more later on. You can see that TurboFlow mode is enabled. It's non-zero, as we'd expect, because a TurboFlow label was provided in the config file. The topic name is topic A, and the desk address shows the multicast group address this topic will use. So these are the basic log events that get generated by the sender. So let's take a look at the receiver side now. Next slide. Slide 14. The RMM receiver program simply specifies a config file on the command line. And the configuration file is pretty much exactly the same as the sender configuration file, which you'd expect because the receiver has to subscribe to the topics the sender is using, and it has to get the data from the multicast group address and port that the sender is sending to, et cetera. And note that as with the sender, you need to programmatically change the IP address if you're going to split the sender and receiver across machines. Next slide. Slide 15. Here is the configuration file and the command line I use to run the RMM receiver. As I said, the receiver config file looks the same as the sender's, as the receiver is subscribing to all the sender's topics. And you can see the command line I used at the bottom of the slide. Next slide. Slide 16. This is one of the receiver's first log events. As with the sender, the receiver first creates an instance using the RMM RX init API and a log event result that shows the instance characteristics. And again, I've shown the log level 5 being used because you have to have this log level or higher in order to actually see these informational log events. Next slide. Slide 17. And also, just as with the sender, the receiver prints out a before and after log event for each topic that gets created. You can see that the topic name and turbo flow mode match the sender configuration. Note that the NACS feedback parameter is set to 0 in the first log event and 1 in the second. As I said before, the transmitter defines the feedback mode. So this NACS feedback setting determines if the receiver will enable the feedback mode offered by the transmitter. So by setting NACS feedback to 0, the application is saying, I'll take the default policy set by the instance. And the default policy is to enable NACS feedback on any topic that offers it. And that's what gets set. In the second log event, you can see NACS feedback is equal to 1 in the bottom right corner there. Next slide. Slide 18. So far, we've covered log events that tell you the configuration parameters your transmitter and receiver are using. From here on out, we'll be focusing on the log events that happen when messages start flowing. Well, we've got one more here. So on the receiver side, the first log event you'll see after the topic parameters have been reported is an indication that your receiver has joined a multicast group. And you can see log event 15061 here shows that the receiver has joined multicast group 239, 255, 124, 1. But this doesn't mean that messages are flowing yet or that the transmitter is even running. Because with multicasting, receivers use the multicast group address to inform the network that they are interested in receiving packets sent to that group. So that's all that has occurred at this point. Now, when event 15070 occurs, that's an indication that the first message on a topic has been received by the application. So the stream is the physical channel over which the topic messages are flowing. And you can see here that the stream is being established for topic A. But just as importantly here is that you can tell who the transmitter of this stream is. And in this case, the sender is on the loopback interface using port 38677. And you'll see why this is important when we discuss receiver snapshots later on. So if your transmitter is sending messages over a topic and your receiver has joined the multicast group but no stream has been recognized, you probably have a configuration problem and the packets aren't flowing where you think they are. So this means it's probably time to break out your system tools like TCP dump, ifconfig, route, etc., and see where the transmitter's packets are going and whether the receiver machine can see the packets on the interface you expect them to be flowing over. Next slide, slide 19. So now we know how to examine the transmitter and receiver instance and topic configuration at startup, and we know how to tell that a packet has made it from the sender to the receiver. So the next step is to look at what the apps are doing once the messages start flowing, and this means snapshots. A snapshot is a periodic log event that dumps counters and performs a bunch of calculations that help you gauge the health of your LLM application. And snapshots are used extensively by support for problem determination. So there's three types of snapshots. There's transmitter, receiver, and RCMS. And we're going to focus on transmitter and receiver in this presentation because while the principle of the RCMS snapshot is the same as the other snapshots, the RCMS concepts, configuration, et cetera, that are required to explain the RCMS snapshots, they're a presentation all by themselves. So stay tuned for a future WSD on that topic. Next slide, slide 20. The first thing we need to do is enable the snapshots. So we'll start with the sender. For the sender, you have to enable two instance level parameters, snapshot cycle milli and print stream info underscore TX for transmitter. The snapshot cycle merely tells the LLM runtime how frequently in milliseconds to take a snapshot. And if you set it to zero, snapshots are disabled, and that's the default value. And the print stream info TX, that tells LLM, the LLM runtime, to dump the stats as a log event message. You must have the instance log level set to at least info level in order for snapshot log events to be delivered to your log event handler. And note the tip on this page. Snapshots are, like I said, a common request from IBM support when we're doing problem determination. And the easiest and least intrusive way to enable snapshots is to use the advanced config file. Don't just copy the sample advanced config file from the sample programs into your app's working directory and flip on the snapshot parameters, because the sample advanced config files ship with a bunch of other settings in there for demonstration purposes, and those settings might affect the characteristics of your application. So instead, just create a two-line file in your app's working directory with snapshot cycle milli and print stream info TX lines in them. And that way you don't mess with any of the other instance level settings and override them in your LLM application. Next slide, slide 21. Take a look at what a transmitter snapshot actually looks like. The next few slides are all for the same snapshot log event. And on each one, I'm going to focus on a different area, the snapshot information. So first of all, a snapshot is broken down into two sections, the instance info at the top, followed by the stream info. And the stream info section is further broken down into a separate stanza for each stream. And you can see in the instance info that n streams equals 4, and that there are 4 streams, stream stanzas below. So n streams is the number of streams for that instance. And each of these streams corresponds to a topic. So for the purposes of this simple application, we can use stream and topic interchangeably, but technically a stream is the physical channel over which the packets are transmitted, and the topic is the logical channel over which the messages are sent. So if you know that a particular topic is having issues, you can enable snapshots and key in on that specific topic's stats and see what's going on with it. Next slide. This is the same snapshot report. And the packet rate is useful. It's a useful stat, and it tells you the packets per second since the last snapshot was taken. You can see here what the packet arrival rate for this instance is, 2,796 packets per second. And you can see the packet rate for each stream. And the sum of the per stream packet rates equals the instance packet rate. And this is useful for understanding the message volumes for each topic. So for example, if you see a dramatic drop-off on a topic's packet rate, you know, it may signify a problem. Next slide. Slide 23. So I got a lot of info on this one. So let's look at the max packets allowed and the min history packets values up top of the slide in the instance info section. These values are important because they directly affect the overall reliability of your LLM application. They represent the boundaries within which the transmitter's history buffers will operate, and they correspond to the amount of memory the LLM runtime has to work with. So the history buffers are the per topic, per stream queues where packets are placed after they have been sent. In the case of NAC receiver feedback, which we're using, the sample programs, you know, the transmitter history buffers will grow to 80% of the max packets allowed value, and then they'll be trimmed down to the min history packets size. So these values are calculated from some of the configuration settings specified when the instance was created, and the values remain the same for all the snapshot log events. So in the blue boxes to the right, I provided the calculations the LLM runtime uses to determine the values for max packets allowed and min history packets. So let's go through the calculations, and I'll talk a bit about how these values affect the operation of your LLM transmitter app. So let's start with max packets allowed. The second box down. You can see that it's calculated by multiplying the max memory allowed kbytes value that was defined at instance creation by 1024, since it's a kbyte value, and then dividing by the packet size, which was also defined when the instance was created. And this value represents the number of packets that LLM can store in the memory it has been allotted. And then similarly, with min history packets, you can see that it's calculated by multiplying the minimal history k bytes value that was defined at instance creation, multiplying that by 1024, and then dividing by the packet size. And this value is important because it represents the size down to which the overall history buffers are going to be reduced each time history buffer trimming occurs. The third blue box shows that the sum of the packets on all the topic history queues will fall between the min history packets and the max packets allowed values, which you'd expect. It's a snapshot, and as long as it's not taken right on a boundary condition, you'd expect it to be between the two values. The bottom blue box calculates what the size of each topic's history queue will be reduced to at each history buffer trimming. So you basically take the min history packets value and divide by the number of streams you have, and that's what each stream's history queue will be trimmed down to. So why are all these calculations useful? Well, the answer is that when you're trying to determine how much history to keep on your transmitter's topics, you have to evaluate the packet rates on the topics, the receiver's needs for retransmission, your transmitter's memory constraints, and set your minimal history and max memory characteristics accordingly. And it's not something that a single calculation is going to resolve. There's no substitute for empirical testing. It's definitely necessary to determine what values are right for your application. Next slide. Slide 24. So lastly, I want to talk about the per-topic calculation of the packetization rate, which is achieved by batching multiple messages into a single packet, which is a big feature of LLM. The packetization rate is the average number of messages per packet and is shown by the MPP, messages per packet, value in each stream's stanza. So how LLM batches messages, it's a function of a number of factors. The runtime, LLM runtime has a bunch of sophisticated patented algorithms for optimizing the throughput and latency. So I can't explain what the algorithms are, but I can talk about some generally observable characteristics of the MPP calculation and the numbers we see here. The messages per packet in the snapshot is just about 2 for each topic. If you consider that the message, the packet size is 8,192 bytes, 8K, and our message size is 1,000 bytes, the highest packetization rate you could hope to achieve is probably 7, because there's some little bit of overhead. So why does this snapshot show only about 2? And the answer is that latency has to be considered. So the message rate is only 1,000 messages per second, which is really slow for LLM's high-performance capabilities. But I was running this on my laptop, which has got a lot of limitations. The LLM runtime doesn't wait around forever for a packet to fill up before it sends it out, because otherwise the latency would suffer. But as I increase the message rate, the messages per packet goes up because more messages can be added to the packet in a shorter period of time. And it's a lot more complicated than that, but that's an easy general observation on the MPP value. And it's also worth noting that the MPP number is going to vary based on your hardware, your network, your OS settings, the number and speed of your CPUs, etc. So if you achieve a certain packetization rate on a VMware image on your laptop, like I did, the same MPP values won't necessarily apply to your high-performance production environment. So again, there's no substitute for empirical testing to optimize your overall LLM performance, and batching is only one of many considerations you'll want to make when you're evaluating your application's performance characteristics. Next slide, slide 25. So let's stay on the topic of messages per packet for just a minute here, and I want to demonstrate a point here on these next couple slides. So you can tell LLM you don't want to batch at all by setting the don't batch flag. You submit a message for sending. And this means send the packet immediately, and it can lower your latency in certain situations. So I ran the RMM sender program using the same settings as before, 1,000 byte message, 1,000 messages per second, but with the don't batch flag set. And next slide. Slide 26, and you can see what the result is. The MPP value goes to 1.0, as you'd expect. And note that the packet rate is now basically what our message rate is, because there's a one-to-one mapping of messages and packets, because we said don't batch. Next slide. Slide 27. So now let's look at snapshots on the receiver side. So the steps to enable receiver side snapshots are the same as on the sender side. The only difference is that you set the variable print stream info underscore RX, note the RX versus TX, and you create a file called rmmradvanced.config as opposed to rmmtadvanced.config, which is what you used. The T was on the sender transmitter. So it bears repeating that to minimize the impact on your app's config settings, you want to create your own advanced config file with just the two snapshot settings in it. And so don't go blindly grab the advanced config file from the samples, because that has a lot of other settings in it. Next slide. Slide 28. So here's a receiver snapshot. And the basic layout of the receiver snapshot is the same as the transmitter, in that there is an instance stanza followed by stream stanzas. And many of the calculations are similar to the transmitter side, but in this case, they apply to the incoming packets. And you can see in the instance info that I've highlighted the number of streams and topics and the throughput rate. And at the stream level, I've highlighted the stream ID and the topic name. And remember before when I said that the mapping of the stream ID to the sender IP address and port was important for receiver snapshots? Well, here's why. If you're examining snapshots and the stats and counters indicate abnormal behavior on a specific stream, you can use the stream ID's new stream detected log event message, which I talked about earlier, to map the stream ID in your snapshot here to the source IP address and port, which will identify the sender of the topic in question. So you can determine where those packets should be coming from. And one of the useful receiver side snapshot fields is this NACS created field that I pointed to. And as long as this value is zero for all of your topics, you know that your receiver has not missed any packets on any of the streams. So here in this snapshot, we see all zeros for our NACS created. Next slide. So I want to take a look at a few scenarios of missed packets and show how the snapshot can help understand what has happened. The RMM basic sample uses negative acknowledgement feedback, NACS feedback. And so I'm going to explain how the NAC feedback works a little bit here. So the NAC feedback is used to recover from message loss. So it's not preventing it, but it's recovering from it. And this means that LLM is able to detect when there is a gap in the sequence numbers of the packets it's receiving. And when LLM detects a gap, it generates a NAC packet for the missed packet or a range of packets. And that range of packets is a key performance feature of LLM, because it can use a single NAC packet to request retransmission of multiple packets. And this minimizes the repair traffic on the network. So NACs are usually due to two reasons. One, the receiver is overwhelmed by incoming packets. And the LLM runtime, it buffers the incoming data to help receivers overcome spikes in message traffic that result in the application's inability to keep pace with the message arrival rate. But if that condition persists, the receiver's buffers are eventually going to overflow, and the older packets will have to be tossed by LLM to make way for the newly arrived packets. So that's one condition under which NACs are generated. The other is a lossy network. And if your network is unstable, you know, packets can get lost somewhere between the sender and the receiver. And there's three outcomes for a NAC request. One, the transmitter has the missed packet in its history buffer, and it retransmits the packet to the receiver. And in this case, you have data recovery. Case two, the transmitter no longer has the missed packet in its history buffer, and it sends an indication that it couldn't satisfy the NAC request. And in this case, there's unrecoverable data loss. And the third scenario is the transmitter does not respond to the receiver's NAC request fast enough, and the receiver gives up on getting a retransmission. And in this case as well, there's unrecoverable data loss. So I created a few scenarios to demonstrate a data recovery situation and a data loss situation. And I'll show how the snapshot log events give us knowledge of the NAC request and what the outcome was. Next slide. Slide 30. So this first scenario demonstrates data recovery. So to do this, you can run the sender and receiver using the standard 1,000-byte message, 1,000 messages per second parameters that I've used before. And all you have to do is slow the receiver down enough so that it doesn't keep up for a bit with the incoming packets. And I did it by using the IP tables command to block the receiver port for a while. And you can also set a breakpoint in your on-message callback, which brings your whole program to a halt. Either of those will work. So what you do is you just keep tabs on your log events, and each time you re-enable things, you look to see if the NAT created field of any of your snapshot topics has increased from zero. Remember we showed that in the previous receiver snapshot. And if it hasn't, you just do it again for a longer interval. But if you keep increasing the interval that you pause your receiver, eventually you'll get to the point of missed packets and the NAC request will be generated. Next slide. So here's a sample receiver snapshot that demonstrates recoverable packet loss. So how do we know it was recoverable packet loss? If you look at the fields that are highlighted in green, you can see that the NAC's created fields are greater than zero, but the total packet loss fields are all still zero. And this is your indication that no unrecoverable data loss has occurred. It's just an indication of recoverable data. And just as a quick aside, if you were to enable trace level logging, meaning crank up your LLM logging to level 9, you'd see detailed log events on a per packet basis on both the receiver and the transmitter logs. And you can even use these log events to track a packet sequence number from the NAC request on the receiver over to the sender's recovery, transmission back to the receiver, all of that. But it's really only useful as an academic exercise because with high-speed messaging, the aggregate statistics are what you're going to be interested in. And the important thing to know here is that a packet was missed, not which specific packet was missed. So let's take a look at the unrecoverable data loss situation. Next slide. So to create a situation where there's unrecoverable data loss, all you have to do is overwhelm your receiver. I did this scenario on a VMware image on my laptop, so 20,000 messages per second on each topic, which is about 80K messages per second, did the trick. All you have to do is watch the snapshot output, and you'll know when problems start to occur, because the packet rate will go way down, and your NAC counts will go way up. Next slide. And anytime there's unrecoverable packet loss, you're going to see this warning level log event indicating unrecoverable packet loss. And the additional information stuff there, that means something to developers. I think it's the range of sequence numbers for the packets that were missed. But all you need to take away from this is that packet loss occurred. And the snapshot will help you see where the packet loss occurred. Next slide. So here's the snapshot. And as before, you can see that the NAC's created counters have grown. However, this time, the total packets lost counters are non-zero, indicating that there was unrecoverable data loss. So if you examine consecutive snapshots, you can get a better idea if this was an acute event or whether there's a persistent problem. And in the case of a persistent problem, the NAC's created and the total packets lost counters will continue to rise. And if your receiver stops receiving packets altogether, your throughput counters are going to drop off, or your throughput counters will stop growing, and your packet rate, your packets per second, will drop off dramatically. Next slide. All right. So I hope what I've discussed and demonstrated today has given you some insights into how you can use log events to understand your application's behavior. I've discussed what log events look like and how they're integrated into an LLM application. We learned what log events reveal about your application's behavior, including the static configuration information about your application's instance and topics, what groups your receiver has joined, and how to recognize when a new stream has been detected. We examined snapshot log events to summarize an application's packet rates, memory utilization, batching. We showed how you can create NAC scenarios and examine snapshot log events to distinguish between data recovery of missed packets and unrecoverable packet loss. But this presentation is really only the tip of the iceberg. Log events and snapshots, they can be applied to a lot more advanced endeavors. As I said before, with our CMS and examining the transmitter and receiver tiers in your RCMS configuration, the snapshots can be used as an aid in performance tuning and congestion management. And the concepts you learn from studying snapshots are directly applicable to the LLM monitoring APIs, which are a more sophisticated way of integrating performance monitoring directly into your application. So stay tuned for future WSDE presentations where we'll be discussing those topics. Next slide. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide a lot of valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information. You can visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The Service Request Tool, SR tool, for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notification link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. So at this point, I'd like to turn the presentation back over to you, Joseph.
At this point, Diane, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Abraham Cherian, you may ask your question.
Yes, I just came to the presentation a little late, but I'm just wondering, who is the prime user of this product? You have customers that are using it in what circumstances and what application being supported for this?
The primary customer base at this point is the financial services sector. So we're working with a lot of the exchanges and investment banks and a lot of the major financial centers around the world. And it's also embedded in an IBM product, an industry solution called WebSphere Front Office for Financial Markets, which is a market data delivery solution.
Oh, okay. So this is an embedded product with the other. Okay.
Well, that's one case. It also is sold as a standalone product, which customers are integrating into their existing market data solutions.
How does this work with the WebSphere MQ?
The product has been branded with WebSphere MQ brand, but the technology at this point is still separate from the WebSphere MQ product suite. There's no announced intention in terms of a roadmap of what the future activity is going to be to help bind the two products to bring LLM into the fold of WebSphere MQ, but I do know that is something that has been discussed, and with the branding of the product in the WebSphere MQ brand, it's a good sign that there are probably future plans in that direction.
Thank you very much.
There are no further questions, sir.
Thank you, Diane. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.